looked up. His hair fell across his face, hiding everything but his eyes from the moonlight. His eyes glowed in the dark, reflecting lights I could not see. Stop! He was waving his hands. His long-sleeved shirt was untucked over jeans. He hit the circle of wind and froze. He put his hands up as if he was trying to touch it. Two people in one night who could sense the power. Unusual, but sort of cool. If Magnus hadn't been on the run from the police, we could have sat down and had a nice talk about it. We told you to stay off this land, Mr. Bouvier, Sterling said. Bouvier looked at him, turning his head slowly as if concentrating on anything besides the feel of power was hard. We've tried being nice about this, Sterling said. We are not going to be nice any longer. Beau? The pump action on a shotgun is a very distinctive sound. I turned towards the sound, gun in hand. I don't remember thinking about it. I was just looking down the barrel of a gun at Beau. He was cradling a shotgun in his arms, not aimed at anything. That saved him. I know if it had been pointed near us, I'd have shot him. I was still seeing double. I could see the graveyard behind my eyes where there is no optic nerve. The cemetery was mine. I knew the bodies, I knew the ghosts, I knew where all the pieces lay. I stared down the gun, seeing Beau and the shotgun, but inside my head, the dead still reached out for their scattered parts. The ghosts were still real. The power had agitated them. They'd dance and sway on their own for a while, but they'd fade back into the ground. There was more than one way to raise the dead, but not permanently. I couldn't look away from the shotgun to see what Bouvier was doing. Anita, please don't raise the dead. His surprisingly deep voice held a note of pleading. I fought an urge to glance at him. Why not, Magnus? Get off my land, Sterling said. This is not your land. Get off my land, or you will be shot for trespassing. Beau glanced my way. Mr. Sterling? He was being very careful that the shotgun stayed loose and harmless in his hands. Beau? Show him we mean business. Mr. Sterling, he said again, with a little more urgency in his voice. Do what I pay you for, Sterling said. He started to raise the shotgun to his shoulder, but slowly, watching me. Don't do it, I said. I let my breath out all the way until my body was still and quiet. There was nothing but the gun and what I was aiming at. Beau lowered the shotgun. I took a breath and said, Put it on the ground, now. Ms. Blake, this is none of your business, Sterling said. You are not going to shoot someone for trespassing on a piece of land while I watch. Larry had his gun out too now. It wasn't pointed at anybody in particular, which I was grateful for. Pointed guns have a tendency to go off if you don't know what you're doing. On the ground, Beau, now. I won't ask a third time. He laid the shotgun on the ground. I pay your salary. You don't pay me enough to get killed. Sterling made an exasperated sound and moved forward as if he would pick up the gun himself. Don't touch it, Raymond. You'll bleed just as easily as anybody else. He turned to me. I cannot believe that you would hold me at gunpoint on my own property. I lowered my gun arm just a touch. It gets shaky if you hold a shooting pose too long. I cannot believe that you had Beau come up here armed. You knew my little show would attract Bouvier. You knew it and planned for it. You cold-blooded son of a bitch. Mr. Kirkland, are you going to let her talk to me like that? I am a client. Larry shook his head. I'm with her on this one, Mr. Sterling. You were going to ambush that man, murder him. Why? Good question, I said. Why are you so afraid of the Bouvier family? Or is it just him that you're afraid of? I am afraid of no one. Come along. We will leave you to your new friend. He marched away, and the others followed. Beau sort of hesitated. I'll bring the shotgun down for you, I said. He nodded. Figured that. And you better not be waiting down there with another gun. He looked at me for a long minute. At both of us. He shook his head. I'm going home to my wife. You do that, Beau, I said. He walked away, black slicker flapping against his legs. He hesitated, then said, I'm out of it from now on. Money doesn't spend if you're dead. I knew a few vampires that would argue with him, but I said,
Glad to hear it.
I just don't want to get shot, he said. He walked away down the slope, out of sight. I stood there with the Browning pointed skyward. I turned in a slow circle, surveying the mountaintop. We were alone, the three of us. So why didn't I want to put my gun up? Magnus took a step up the slope and stopped. He raised slender hands towards the power-charged air. He trailed fingertips down it like it was water. I felt the ripples of his touch shiver down my skin, tremble through my magic. No, I wasn't putting my gun up yet.
What was that?
Larry asked. His gun was still out, pointed at the ground. Bouvier moved his gleaming eyes to Larry.
He is not a necromancer, Anita, but he is more than he seems.
Aren't we all? I said.
Why didn't you want me to raise the dead, Magnus?
He stared up at me. His eyes were full of glinting lights like reflections in a pool, but the reflections were of things that were not there.
Answer me, Magnus.
Or what? He asked.
You'll shoot me?
Maybe, I said. The slope made him shorter than I was, so I was looking down on him.
I didn't believe anyone could raise dead this old without a human sacrifice. I thought you'd take Sterling's money, try, fail, and go home.
He took a step forward, trailing his hands through the power again, as if he were testing it. As if he weren't sure he could cross into it. The touch made Larry gasp.
With this power, you can raise some of them, maybe enough of them, Magnus said.
Enough for what? I asked. He stared up at me, as if he hadn't meant to speak aloud.
You mustn't raise the dead on this mountain, Anita. Larry, you must not.
Give us a reason not to, I said. He smiled up at me.
I don't suppose just because I asked.
I shook my head.
Not hardly.
This would be so much easier if glamour worked on you. He took another step up the slope.
Of course, if glamour worked on you, we wouldn't be here, would we?
If he wouldn't answer one question, I'd try another.
Why'd you run from the police?
He took another step closer, and I backed up. He'd done nothing overtly threatening, but there was something about him as he stood there. Something alien. There were images in his eyes that made me want to glance behind to see what was reflecting in his eyes. I could almost see trees, water. It was like the things you see out of the corner of your eye, except in color.
You told the police my secret. Why?
I had to.
You really think I did those awful things to those boys?
He took another step, moving into the flow of power, but he didn't slip easily as Larry had. Magnus was like a mountain, huge, forcing the power to go wide around him, as if he filled more space magically than could be seen with the naked eye. I pointed the Browning two-handed at his chest.
No, I don't.
Then why point a gun at me?
Why all this fey magic shit?
He smiled.
I performed a lot of glamour tonight. It's like a high.
You feed off your customers, I said. You don't just do it for business. You siphon them. That's fucking unseely court. He gave a graceful shrug.
I am what I am.
How'd you know the victims were boys? I asked. Larry moved to my left, gun pointed carefully at the ground. I'd yelled at him for pointing guns at people too soon.
The police said so. Liar.
He smiled gently.
One of them touched me. I saw it all.
Convenient, I said. He reached out towards me.
Don't even think it.
Larry pointed his gun at Magnus.
What's going on, Anita?
I'm not sure. I can't allow you to raise the dead here. I am sorry.
How are you going to stop us? I asked.
He stared at me, and I felt something push against my magic, like something large swimming just out of sight in the dark. It made me gasp.
Freeze right there, or I will pull this trigger.
I haven't moved a muscle, he said softly.
No games, Magnus. You're too damn close to being dead.
What did he just do? Larry asked.
There was a fine tremor in his two-handed grip.
Later, I said.
Clasp your hands on top of your head, Magnus, slowly. Very slowly.
Are you going to take me in, as they say on television?
Yeah, I said. You've got a better chance of getting to the jail alive with me than with most of the cops.
I don't think I'll go with you. Staring down two guns, and he still sounded sure of himself. He was either stupid or knew something I didn't. I didn't think he was stupid.
Tell me when to shoot him, Larry said.
When I shoot him, you can shoot him too.
Okay, Larry said.
Magnus looked from one to the other of us. You would take my life for such a small thing?
In a heartbeat, I said.
Now clasp your hands slowly on top of your head.
If I don't?
I don't bluff, Magnus.
Do you have silver bullets in those guns?
I just stared at him. I could feel Larry shift slightly beside me. You can only point a gun so long without getting tired or antsy.
I bet they're silver.
Silver isn't very effective against fairies.
Cold iron works best, I said. I remember.
Even normal lead bullets would be better than silver. The metal of the moon is a friend to the Fae.
Hands, now, or we'll find out how fairy flesh holds up to silver bullets.
He raised his hands slowly, gracefully upward. His hands were above shoulder level when he threw himself backwards, falling down the slope. I fired, but he kept on rolling down the earth, and somehow I couldn't quite see him. It was like the air blurred around him. Larry and I stood at the top of the slope and fired down on him, and I don't think either of us hit him. He scrambled down the raw earth faster than he looked, because he got harder to see even in the moonlight until he vanished into the underbrush left near the midpoint on that side.
Please tell me he didn't just go poof, Larry said.
He didn't just go poof, I said.
What did he do then?
How the hell do I know? This wasn't covered in Fairies 301. I shook my head. Let's get out of here. I don't know what's going on, but whatever it is, I think we lost our client.
You think we lost our hotel rooms?
I don't know, Larry. Let's go find out. I clicked the safety on the Browning, but left it out in my hand. I'd have left the safety off, but that didn't seem wise while stumbling down a rocky mountainside, even in the moonlight. I think you can put the gun up now, Larry. He hadn't put his safety on.
You aren't.
But I've got the safety on.
Oh.
He looked a little sheepish, but he clicked the safety on and holstered it.
You think they would have really killed him?
I don't know. Maybe. Bo would have shot at him, but see how much good it did us.
Why does Sterling want Magnus dead?
I don't know.
Why did Magnus run from the police?
I don't know.
It makes me nervous when you keep answering all my questions with, I don't know.
Me too, I said. I glanced back once just before we lost sight of the mountaintop. The ghosts twisted and flared like candle flames, cool white flames. I knew something else I hadn't known before tonight. Some of the bodies were nearly 300 years old. 100 years older than Sterling had told us they were. 100 years makes a lot of difference in a zombie raising. Why had he lied? Afraid I'd refuse, maybe.
Maybe.
Some of the bodies were Indian remains. Bits and pieces of jewelry, animal bone, stuff that wasn't European. The Indians in this area didn't bury their dead, at least not in simple graves. And this wasn't a mound. Something was going on, and I didn't have the faintest idea what it was. But I'd find out. Maybe tomorrow after we got new hotel rooms, gave back the nifty Jeep, rented a new car, and told Bert we no longer had a client. Maybe I'd let Larry break the news to him. What are apprentices for if they can't do some of the grunt work? Okay, okay. I'd tell Bert myself, but I wasn't looking forward to it.
Chapter 18. Sterling and Co. were gone when we trudged down off the mountain. We drove the Jeep back to the hotel. I was frankly surprised they hadn't taken the Jeep with them and left us to walk. Sterling didn't strike me as a man who liked having guns pointed at him. But then, who does? Larry's room was first down the hall. He hesitated with his room card in the lock.
You think the rooms are paid for tonight, or do we pack?
We pack, I said. He nodded and shoved the card in its little slot. The door handle turned, and in he went. I went to the next door and put in my own card. There was a connecting door between the rooms. We hadn't unlocked it, but it was there. Personally, I liked my privacy, even from my friends, and especially from my co-workers. The room's silence flowed around me. It was wonderful. A few minutes of quiet before I faced Bert and told him all that money had just flown the coop. The room was a suite with an outer room and a separate bedroom. My apartment wasn't much bigger. There was a bar set into the left-hand wall. Being a teetotaler, that was a real plus for me. The walls were a soft pink with a delicate pattern of gilt-edged leaves, the carpet a deep burgundy. The full-sized couch was a purple so dark it looked nearly black. A love seat matched it. Two armchairs were done in a purple, burgundy, and white floral pattern. All exposed wood was very dark and highly polished. I had suspected I had some kind of honeymoon suite until I saw Larry's room. It was nearly a mirror of mine, but done in shades of green. A cherrywood desk that looked like a genuine antique sat against the far wall. The connecting door was beside it, but opened opposite so you wouldn't accidentally bump the desk. Monogrammed stationery graced the desk, along with a second telephone line for your modem, I guess. I don't know if I'd ever stayed in a room this expensive. I doubted seriously if Beetle, Sterling, and Lowenstein would want to pick up the tab now. A sound jerked me around. The Browning sort of materialized in my hand. I was staring down the barrel at Jean-Claude. He stood in the doorway leading to the bedroom. The shirt had long, full sleeves that had been gathered in three puffs down the length of the arm to end in a spill of cloth that framed his long, pale fingers. The collar was high and tied with a white cravat that spilled lace down the front of him, tucked into a vest. It was black and velvety with pinpricks of silver on it. Thigh-high black boots fit his legs like a second skin. His hair was nearly as black as the vest, making it hard to tell where the curls ended and the velvety cloth began. A silver and onyx stick pin that I'd seen before pierced the white lace at his chest.
"Well, ma petite, are you going to shoot me?"
I was still standing there with the gun pointed at him. He had not moved. He had been very careful to do nothing that could be taken as threatening. His blue eyes stared at me. Serious, waiting. I pointed the gun at the ceiling and let out a breath I hadn't realized I was holding. "How the hell did you get in here?" He smiled then and pushed away from the door jamb. He walked into the room with that wonderful gliding motion of his. Part cat, part dancer, part something else. Whatever the else was, it wasn't human. I put the gun away, though I wasn't sure I wanted to. It made me feel better having it in my hand. Trouble was, a gun wouldn't help me against Jean-Claude. Oh, if I was going to kill him, it would. But that's not what we were doing lately. Lately, we were dating. Can you stand it? I wasn't sure I could.
"The desk clerk let me in."
His voice was very mild, amused. Whether with himself or with me, it was hard to tell.
"Why would he do that?"
"Because I asked him to."
He walked around me like a shark circling its prey. I didn't turn with him. I stared straight ahead and let him circle me. It would only amuse him if I kept him in sight. The hairs at the back of my neck stood up. I took a step forward and felt his hand fall back. He'd been about to touch my shoulder. I didn't want him to touch me. "You used mind tricks on the desk clerk?"
"Yes," he said.
That one word was full of so much more. I turned towards him so I could see his face. He was staring at my legs. He raised his face to mine, and somehow that one quick gaze took in my entire body. His midnight blue eyes looked even darker than usual. We weren't sure how I was able to meet his gaze. I was beginning to suspect that being a necromancer had more fringe benefits than just being good with zombies.
"Red becomes you, ma petite."
His voice had grown softer, deeper. He moved closer to me, not touching. He knew better than that, but somehow his eyes showed where his hands wanted to be.
"I like this very much."
His voice was soft and warm, and far more intimate than his words.
"Your legs are wonderful."
His words were growing softer, a whisper in the dark that hovered around my body like a line of warmth. His voice was always like that, touchable. He still had the best voice I'd ever heard. "Stop it, Jean-Claude. I'm too short to have wonderful legs."
"I do not understand this modern obsession with height."
He ran his hands just above my hose, so close I could almost feel it like a breath of warmth against my skin. "Stop it," I said.
"Stop what?"
His voice was utterly mild, harmless.
"Right."
I shook my head. Asking Jean-Claude not to be a pain in the ass was like asking rain not to be wet. Why try? "Fine. Flirt all you want, but keep in mind that you're here to save the life of a young boy. A young boy who may be being raped while we sit here and waste time." He sighed deeply and walked towards me. Something must have shone on my face because he sat down in the other chair, not trying to come closer.
"You have a habit, ma petite, of taking all the fun out of seducing you."
"Yippee," I said. "Now can we get down to business?" He smiled his lovely, perfect smile.
"I had arranged to meet with the master of Branson tonight."
"Just like that," I said.
"Isn't that what you wanted me to do?"
he asked. His voice held that amused edge again. "Yeah, I'm just not used to you giving me exactly what I ask for."
"I would give you anything you wanted, ma petite, if you would only let me."
"I wanted you out of my life. You don't seem to want to do that." He sighed.
"No, ma petite, I do not want to do that."
He let it go at that. No accusations about me wanting to be with Richard instead of him. No vague threats on Richard's life. It was sort of odd. "You're up to something," I said. He turned, eyes wide, long fingers pressed to his heart.
"Moi?"
"Yeah, you," I said. I shook my head and let it go. He was up to something. I knew him well enough to know the signs, but I also knew him well enough to know that he wouldn't tell me until he was good and ready. Nobody kept a secret like Jean-Claude, and nobody else had as many of them. There was no deceit in Richard. Jean-Claude lived and breathed it. "I've got to change and pack before we can leave."
"Change your lovely red skirt? Why? Because I like it?"
"Not just that," I said, though admittedly it's a plus. "I can't wear my inner pants holster with the skirt."
"I will not argue that having a second gun will help our show of force tomorrow night."
I stopped and turned. "What do you mean tomorrow night?" He spread his hands wide.
"It is too close to dawn, ma petite. We cannot even drive to the master's lair before the sun rises."
"Damn it," I said softly and with feeling.
"I did my part, ma petite, but even I cannot stop the sun from rising."
I leaned against the back of the love seat, hands gripping the edge hard enough to hurt. I shook my head. "We're going to be too late to save him."
"Ma petite, ma petite."
He knelt in front of me, staring up at me.
"Why does this boy bother you so very much? Why is his life so precious to you?"
I stared down into Jean-Claude's perfect face and had no answer. "I don't know." He laid his hands on top of my hands.
"You're hurting yourself, ma petite."
I moved my hands out from under his, crossing my arms over my stomach. Jean-Claude remained kneeling, a hand on either side of me. He was entirely too close to me, and I was suddenly very aware of how short the skirt was. "I have to go pack," I said.
"Why? Don't you like your room?"
Without moving, he seemed closer somehow. I could feel the line of his body against my legs like heat. "Move," I said. He leaned backwards, sitting on his heels, forcing me to move past him. The hem of my skirt brushed his cheek as I walked past. "You are such a pain in the ass."
"So nice of you to notice, ma petite. Now why are you leaving this lovely room?"
"A client's paying for the room, and he's not a client anymore."
"Why ever not, ma petite?"
I pulled a gun on him. His eyes widened, his face a perfect mask of surprise. The mask slipped, and he stared at me with ancient eyes. Eyes that had seen much, but still didn't know what to make of me.
"Why would you do that?"
"They were going to shoot a man for trespassing."
"Was he trespassing?"
"Technically, yeah." Jean-Claude just looked at me.
"Does he not have the right to protect his own land?"
"No, not if it means killing people. A piece of land isn't worth killing over."
"Protecting our lands has been a valid excuse for slaughter since the beginning of time, ma petite. Did you suddenly change the rules?"
I wasn't going to stand there and watch them kill a man for walking on a piece of ground. Besides, I think it was a setup.
A setup? You mean a plot to kill the man?
Yeah.
Were you part of this plot?
I may have been bait. He could feel my power over the dead. It called to him.
Now that is interesting. What is this man's name?
You give me the name of the mystery vampire first.
Xavier,
he said. Just like that. Why wouldn't you give me the name earlier?
I do not want the police to have it.
Why not?
I explained all that. Now, the name of the man you saved tonight.
I stared at him and didn't want to give it to him. I didn't like how interested he was in the name. But a deal was a deal.
Bouvier. Magnus Bouvier. I do not know the name.
Should you? He just smiled at me. It meant nothing and everything.
You are an irritating son of a bitch.
Ah, ma petite. How can I resist you when you whisper such sweet endearments to me?
I glared at him, which made him smile wider. There was just the faintest hint of fang peeking into view. Someone knocked on the door. Probably the manager telling me to get out. I walked to the door. I didn't bother looking through the peephole, so I was caught off guard by who was outside. It was Lionel Bayard. Had he come to throw us out in person? I stood there for a second, looking at him. He spoke first, clearing his throat nervously.
Ms. Blake, may I speak with you for a moment?
He was being awfully polite for someone who had come to kick us out. I'm listening, Mr. Bayard.
I really don't think the hallway is the place to discuss this.
I stepped to one side, ushering him into the room. He stepped past me, hands smoothing his tie. His gaze flicked to Jean-Claude, who was standing now. Jean-Claude smiled at Bayard. Pleasant. Charming.
I didn't realize you had company, Miss Blake. I can come back.
I closed the door. No, Mr. Bayard, it's all right. I told Jean-Claude about our misunderstanding this evening. Bayard looked from one to the other of us, as if not sure what to say. Jean-Claude didn't so much sit in the chair as fold his body around it. The movement was almost cat-like.
Anita and I have no secrets from one another, Mr.
Bayard. Lionel Bayard.
He walked over and offered his hand to Jean-Claude. Jean-Claude raised an eyebrow, but took the offered hand. The handshake seemed to make Bayard feel better. A normal gesture. He didn't know what Jean-Claude was. How he could look at him and think him human was beyond me. I'd only seen one vampire that could have passed for human, and he hadn't been human at all. Bayard turned back to me, adjusting his glasses, which didn't need adjusting. That nervous little gesture again. Something was up. "What's up, Bayard?" I asked. I'd closed the door and was leaning to one side of it, arms crossed over my stomach.
I'm here to offer our most sincere apologies for earlier tonight.
I just stared at him. You're apologizing to me?
Yes. Mr. Sterling was overzealous. Why, if you had not been there to bring us all to our senses, a great tragedy might have occurred.
I tried to keep my face blank. I wanted to frown at him or look confused.
Sterling's not mad at me? On the contrary, Miss Blake. He's grateful to you.
I didn't believe that.
Really?
I said.
Oh, yes. In fact, I've been authorized to offer you a bonus.
Why?
To make up for our behavior tonight.
Your behavior was fine, I said. He smiled modestly. His act was about as sincere as faux pearls, but not half so realistic. How much is the bonus?
20,000, he said.
I stayed leaning against the wall, staring at him.
No.
He blinked at me.
Excuse me?
I don't want the bonus.
I'm not authorized to go higher than 20,000, but I could speak with Mr. Sterling. Perhaps he would go higher.
I shook my head and pushed away from the wall. I don't want more money. I don't want the bonus at all.
You aren't quitting on us, are you, Ms. Blake?
He was blinking so fast I thought he'd pass out. Me quitting bothered him. A lot. No, I'm not quitting. But you're already paying an enormous fee. You don't need to pay more.
Mr. Sterling is just very anxious that he has not offended you.
I let that one go. Too easy.
Tell Mr. Sterling I'd have thought better of his apology if it had been delivered in person. Mr. Sterling is a very busy man. He would have come himself, but he had pressing business.
I wondered how often Bayard had to apologize for the big man. I wondered how often the apology was for telling a fellow flunky to shoot someone.
Fine. You've delivered the message. Tell Mr. Sterling that it isn't the gunfight that's going to make me bail. I read the cemetery tonight. Some of the corpses are closer to 300 than 200. 300 years, Lionel. That's an old zombie.
Can you raise them?
He had stepped closer, hands fidgeting with his lapels. He was close to invading my space.
I'd have rather had Jean-Claude next to me.
Maybe. The question isn't can I, but will I, Lionel?
What do you mean?
You lied to me, Lionel. You underestimated the age of the dead by nearly a century.
Not deliberately, Miss Blake, I assure you. I merely repeated what our research department told me. I did not deliberately mislead you.
Sure. He reached out almost like he wanted to touch me. I moved back just enough. He seemed terribly intense. He let his hand drop.
Please, Miss Blake, I did not lie on purpose.
The problem, Lionel, is that I'm not sure I can raise zombies this old without a human sacrifice. Even I have my limits.
So nice to know, Jean-Claude said softly.
I frowned at him. He smiled.
You will try, won't you, Miss Blake?
Maybe. I haven't decided yet. He shook his head.
We will do anything to make this oversight up to you, Miss Blake. It is entirely my fault that I did not double-check the research department's findings. Is there anything that I can do personally to make it up to you?
Just leave. I'll call your office tomorrow to discuss details. I may need some extra, paraphernalia to attempt the raising.
Anything. Anything at all, Miss Blake.
Fine. I'll call. I opened the door and stood by it. I thought it was enough of a hint. It was. Bayard went to the door and almost backed out, apologizing as he went. I closed the door and stood there for a minute.
That little man is up to something, Jean-Claude said.
I turned and looked at him. He was still curled in the chair, looking scrumptious. I didn't need vampiric powers to tell me that.
Neither, he said, did I.
He rose from the chair easily. If I'd curled up in a chair like that, I'd have been stiff. I've got to tell Larry that he can stop packing. I don't understand why we're still hired, but we are.
Can anyone else raise the graveyard?
Not without a human sacrifice. Maybe not even then, I said.
They need you, ma petite. From the little man's anxiety, they must need the dead raised very badly.
Millions of dollars are at stake.
I do not think money is all that is at stake, he said.
I shook my head.
Me either.
He came to join me by the door.
What extra paraphernalia will you need to raise a 300-year-old corpse, ma petite?
I shrugged. A bigger death. I'd originally thought to use a couple of goats. I opened the door.
What are you thinking about using now?
An elephant, maybe, I said. We were out in the hall and he was staring at me. I'm kidding. Honest. Besides, elephants are an endangered species. I was thinking maybe a cow. Jean-Claude stared down at me for a long space of moments, his face very serious.
Remember, ma petite, I can tell if you are lying.
What's that supposed to mean?
You meant the elephant comment.
I frowned up at him. What could I say? Okay, but just for a minute. I wouldn't really do in an elephant. I'm telling the truth.
Yes, ma petite, I know.
I hadn't really meant the crack about the elephant. Not really. It was just the biggest animal I could think of on short notice. And if I was going to attempt to raise several 300-year-old corpses, I was going to need something big. I didn't think a cow would do. Hell, I didn't think a herd of cows would do it. I just hadn't thought of a good alternative yet. But no elephants, I promise. Besides, can you imagine trying to slit the throat of an elephant? The logistics of just getting one to hold still while you killed it were mind-boggling.
There's a reason why most sacrifices are our size or smaller. Makes it easier to hold them down.
We can't just leave Jeff with that monster, Larry said.
He was standing in the middle of his forest green carpet. Jean-Claude was sitting in the corner of the green pattern couch. He was looking amused, like a cat that had found a very interesting mouse.
We aren't leaving him, I said. We just can't go looking for him tonight.
He whirled and pointed a finger at Jean-Claude.
Why? Because he says so?
Jean-Claude's smile widened, definitely amused.
Check the time, Larry. It'll be dawn soon. All the vampires will be a snooze in their coffins.
Larry shook his head. The look on his face reminded me of me. Stubborn, not wanting to accept it.
We have to do something, Anita.
We can't talk to vampires during daylight hours, Larry. That's just the way it is.
And what happens to Jeff today, while we wait for the sun to go down?
His pale skin had gone almost white. His freckles looked like brown ink spots. His pale blue eyes glittered like angry glass. I'd never seen Larry so mad. Hell, I'd never seen him angry. I glanced at Jean-Claude. He just looked at me. I was on my own. Wasn't I always?
Xavier will have to sleep. He won't be able to harm Jeff once the sun rises.
Larry shook his head.
Will we get him back in time?
I wanted to say sure, but I wouldn't lie.
I don't know. I hope so.
His soft, howdy-doody face was set in very stubborn lines. I looked at him and understood why so many people underestimate me. He looked so harmless. Hell, he was sort of harmless, but he was armed now, and learning how to be dangerous. And in his face, for the first time, I saw a grim purpose building. I'd planned on leaving him behind when I went to talk to the Master of Branson. Looking at him now, I wasn't sure he was going to let me do that. He'd had his first vampire hunt tonight. I'd managed to keep him out of the rough stuff until now, but it wasn't going to last. I'd been hoping he'd give up the idea of hunting vampires. Staring into his glittering eyes, I realized I was the one who was fooling myself. In his own way, Larry was as stubborn as I was. Frightening thought, that. But for tonight, he was safe.
You couldn't just comfort me? Tell me we'll find him? Larry asked.
I smiled. I try not to lie to you if I can avoid it.
For once, Larry said, I'd have liked to have heard the lie.
Sorry, I said. He took in a deep breath and let it out slow. His anger was gone just like that. Larry didn't know what it was to hold on to his rage. He didn't brood over things, one of the main differences between us. I never forgave anyone for anything. A character flaw, to be sure, but hell, everyone's gotta have at least one. There was a knock on the door. Larry went for the door. Jean-Claude was suddenly standing by me. I hadn't seen him move. Hadn't heard his leather boots slither over the carpet. Nothing. Magic. My heart was suddenly thudding in my throat. Stomp your feet or something when you do that.
Do what, ma petite?
I glared up at him. That wasn't a mind trick, was it?
No,
he said. That one word slithered across my skin like a low, creeping breeze.
Damn you,
I said softly and with feeling. He smiled.
We've been over that, ma petite. You are too late.
Larry had closed the door.
There's a guy out in the hall says he's with Jean-Claude.
A guy or a vampire? I asked. Larry frowned.
Not a vampire, but if you mean human, I wouldn't go that far.
You expecting company? I asked.
Yes, I am.
Who? He stalked to the door and put a hand on the doorknob.
Someone I believe you've already met.
He opened the door with a flourish, stepping to one side to let me have a clear view. Jason stood in the open door, smiling, relaxed. He was my height exactly, not something you find in a man often. Straight blonde hair barely touched the top of his collar. His eyes were the innocent blue of spring skies. The last time I'd seen him, he'd been trying to eat me. Werewolves will do that sometimes. He was dressed in an oversized black sweater that hit him almost at mid-thigh. He'd had to roll the sleeves over his wrists. His pants were leather, laced up the side from waist to mid-calf, where the laces vanished into boots. The lacings were loose enough that there was a pale line of flesh all the way down.
Hello, Anita.
Hi, Jason. What are you doing here? He had the grace to look embarrassed.
I'm Jean-Claude's new pet.
He said the last word like it was all right. Richard wouldn't have said it that way.
You didn't tell me you brought company, I said. We are going to be calling on the master of the city. We must make a good show of it.
So, a werewolf and what?
Me?
He sighed.
Yes, ma petite. Whether you bear my marks or not, most consider you my human servant.
He raised a hand.
Please, Anita, I know you are not my human servant in the technical sense, but you have helped me defend my territory. You have killed to protect me. That is the best definition of what a human servant does.
So what? I have to pretend to be your human servant on this visit?
Something like that, he said.
Forget it.
Anita, I need a show of strength here. Branson was part of Nicolaos's territory. I gave it up, because the population density could support another group. But it was still my land, and now it's not. Some view that as weakness, rather than practicality.
So without any marks at all, you finally got me to play servant for you.
You manipulative son of a bitch.
You asked me down here, ma petite.
A thread of warmth cut through his words. He stalked towards me.
I am doing you a favor. Do not forget that.
I don't think you'll let me forget, I said. He made a harsh sound, as if he had no words for his anger.
Why do I put up with you? You insult me at every turn. There are many who would give their souls for what I offer you.
He stood in front of me, eyes like dark sapphires, skin white as marble. His skin glowed like there was a light inside him. He looked like some kind of live sculpture made of light, jewels, and stone. He was impressive and scary, but I'd seen it before. Cut the vampire power shit, Jean-Claude. It's almost dawn. Don't you have a coffin to crawl into somewhere? He laughed, but it wasn't pleasant. It was bitter like the touch of steel wool. Something to irritate rather than entice.
Our luggage has not arrived, has it, my wolf?
No, master, Jason said. Your coffin hasn't arrived? I asked.
Either I have chosen a very lax skycab, or...
He let the words trail off, face bland and pleasant. Or what? Larry asked.
Ma petite?
You think the local master took your coffin? I said.
A punishment for entering her territory without observing all the social niceties.
He looked at me when he said it. I suppose that's my fault, I said. He gave that infuriating shrug.
I could have said no, ma petite.
Stop being so civilized about it.
Would you be happier if I was angry?
His voice was very mild when he said it. Maybe, I said. It would have made me feel less guilty, but I didn't say that out loud.
Go to the airport and find our luggage if you can, Jason. Bring it back to Anita's room.
Wait a minute. You are not moving into my room.
It is nearly dawn, ma petite. I have no choice. Tomorrow we will find other accommodations.
You planned this. He gave a short, bitter laugh.
Even my deviousness knows some bounds, ma petite. I would not willingly be without my coffin this close to dawn.
What are you going to do without your coffin? Larry asked. He looked anxious. Jean-Claude smiled.
Do not fear, Lawrence. All I need is darkness, or rather, lack of sunlight. The coffin itself is not absolutely necessary, simply more secure.
I've never known a vampire that didn't sleep in a coffin, I said.
If I am underground in a secure place, I forgo my coffin. Though, truthfully, once daylight finds me, I am insensible, and could sleep on a bed of nails and not know it.
I wasn't sure I believed him. He worked harder than most at passing for human.
You will see the truth of my words soon enough, ma petite.
That's what I'm afraid of, I said.
You can sleep on the couch if you prefer, but I am telling you truly that once full daylight arrives, I will be harmless, helpless, if you like. I would be unable to molest you, even if I wanted to.
And what other fairy tales am I supposed to believe? I've seen you move around after dawn, hidden from light, but you worked just fine.
After 8 hours or so of sleep, if it is still daylight, I can move around, true. But I doubt you will stay abed for 8 hours. You have clients or something, a murder investigation, some business that will take you out and about.
If I leave you alone, who'll see that some maid doesn't come in, pull the curtains back, and French fry you? The smile widened.
Concern over my well-being. I am touched.
I looked at him. He looked pleasant, amused. But it was a mask. His expression when he didn't want you to know what he was thinking, but didn't want you to know that he didn't want you to know.
What are you up to? For once, ma petite, nothing.
Yeah, right. If I find the coffin, I'll need to rent a truck, Jason said. You can use our jeep, Larry said. I glared at him. No, he can't.
Think of it as expediency, ma petite. If Jason must rent a truck, then I may have to spend another day in your bed. I know you do not want that.
There was amusement in his voice, and an undercurrent of something else. It might have been bitterness. I'll drive, Larry said. No, you won't, I said. It's almost dawn, Anita. I'll be all right. I shook my head. No. You can't treat me like a kid brother forever. I can drive the jeep. I promise not to eat him, Jason said. Larry held out his hand for the keys. You have to trust me sometime. I just looked at him. I promise to shoot anything, human or monster, that threatens me while I'm gone. He made the Boy Scout sign. 3 fingers to heaven. You can bail me out of jail and explain that I was just following orders. I sighed. All right, damn it. I gave him the keys. He grinned at me. Thanks. I shook my head. Just hurry back, okay? Anything you say. Just get out of here. And be careful. Larry left with Jason trailing behind. I stared at the door after it closed, wondering if I should have gone with them. Knowing that Larry would have gotten mad, but mad was better than dead. Hell, it was a simple errand. Go to the airport and pick up a coffin. What could go wrong with less than an hour of darkness left? Shit.
You cannot protect him, Anita.
I can try. Jean-Claude gave that infuriating shrug that meant anything you wanted it to mean, and nothing at all.
Shall we retire to your room, ma petite?
I opened my mouth to tell him he could bunk with Larry, but didn't say it. I didn't really believe he'd munch on Larry, but I was sure he wouldn't munch on me. Sure, I said. He looked a little surprised, as if he'd expected an argument. But I was all out of argument tonight. He could have the bed. I'd take the couch. What could be more innocent? Biker nuns from hell, but besides that.
Chapter 19. I could feel dawn pressing against the windows like a cool hand when we got back to my room. It was very near. Jean-Claude smiled at me.
The first time I managed to share a hotel room with you, and there is no time.
He gave an elaborate sigh.
Things never work as I plan with you, ma petite.
Maybe that's a hint, I said.
Perhaps.
He glanced at the closed drapes.
I must go, ma petite. Until darkness.
He shut the bedroom door a little hurriedly. I could feel the coming light pressing around the building. I'd noticed over the years of hunting vamps that I'd become aware of dawn and sunset. There had been times when I'd struggled from disaster to disaster just to stay alive, until that soft, growing pressure of light could sweep the sky and save my cookies. For the first time, I wondered what it would be like to see it as a danger instead of a blessing. After he'd closed the door, I realized my suitcase was in the bedroom. Damn. I hesitated, and finally knocked. No answer. I opened the door just a crack, then farther. He wasn't in there. Water ran in the bathroom. A line of light showed under the door. What did vampires do in bathrooms? Better not to know. I grabbed my suitcase from the floor and carried it out before the bathroom door could open. I did not want to see him again. I did not want to see what happened to him when the sun rose. When the sun had risen enough to pulse against the closed drapes like pale lemon liquid, I changed into a t-shirt and jeans. I had a robe with me, but if I was going to greet both Larry and Jason, I wanted to be wearing some pants. I called down for extra blankets and a pillow. No one bitched that it was a quarter past dawn and a strange time to need bedclothes. They just brought the stuff. True class. The maid didn't even glance at the closed bedroom door. I spread the blanket on the couch and stared at it. It was a pretty couch, but didn't look terribly comfortable. Oh well, virtue had its punishments. Of course, maybe it wasn't virtue that kept me out of the bedroom. If it had been Richard curled up in the next room, then only moral fortitude would have kept me out. With Jean-Claude, I had never seen him after dawn when he was dead to the world. I wasn't sure I wanted to see. I knew I didn't want to cuddle up next to him while the warmth left his body. There was a knock on the door. I hesitated. It was probably Larry, but then again, I went to the door with the Browning naked in my hand. Beau had had a shotgun last night. Paranoia or caution? Hard to tell the difference sometimes. I stood to one side of the door and said, "Yes?"
"Anita, it's us."
I hit the safety and put the barrel of the Browning down the front of my jeans. It was too big a gun to wear in an inner pants holster, but for temporary holding, that worked. I opened the door. Larry leaned against the door jamb, looking rumpled and tired. He had a McDonald's sack in one hand and four cups shoved into one of those styrofoam holders. Two of the cups held coffee, the other two sodas. Jason had a large leather suitcase under each arm, a battered, much smaller suitcase in his right hand, and a second McDonald's bag in his left. He didn't look the least bit tired. A morning person, even after no sleep at all. It was disgusting. His eyes flicked to the gun shoved in my waistband. He noticed, but he didn't comment. Point for him. Larry never even blinked at the gun. "Food?" I asked.
"I didn't eat much last night. Besides, Jason was hungry, too," Larry said.
He came inside, putting the drinks and food on the wet bar. None of us drank. Good to use the bar for something. Jason walked through the door sideways with the suitcases and food, but there was no effort to it. He wasn't straining one little bit to carry it all.
"Show off," I said.
He sat the luggage on the floor.
"This isn't even close to showing off," he said.
I locked the door behind them. "I suppose you can bring the coffin up single-handedly."
"No, but not because it's heavy. It's just too long. The balance isn't right."
Great. Super werewolf. Though for all I knew, all lycanthropes could lift that much weight. Maybe Richard could lift coffins with one arm. It was not a comforting thought. Jason started laying food out on the bar. Larry had already climbed onto one of the bar stools. He was pouring sugar into one of the coffees.
"Did you just leave the coffin in the lobby?" I asked.
I had to lay the Browning on the bar to sit down. I was just too short-waisted to have it down my pants. Larry sat the unopened coffee in front of me.
"It's missing."
I stared at him. "You found the suitcases, but not the coffin?"
"Yep,"
Jason said as he finished dividing the food into three piles. He'd pushed some of it in front of both of us, but the lion's share was in front of him.
"How can you eat this early in the morning?"
"I'm always hungry," he said. He looked at me sort of expectantly. I let it slide. It was too easy.
"Come on, I fed you that one," he said.
"You don't seem particularly worried," I said. He shrugged and slid onto a bar stool.
"What do you want me to say? I've seen some weird shit since I became a werewolf. If I got hysterical every time something went wrong, every time someone I knew died, I'd be in the loony bin by now."
"I thought fights for dominance in the pack, except for pack leader, weren't to the death," I said.
"People forget," he said.
"I'll have to talk to Richard when I get back in town. He hasn't been mentioning any of this."
"Nothing to mention," Jason said. "Just business as usual."
"Great. Did anybody see who took the coffin?" Larry answered, his voice sluggish even with the caffeine and sugar. "There's only so much you can do on no sleep at all."
"No one saw anybody take it. In fact, the only guy left from the night shift said, 'I just turned away for a second and it wasn't there, just the luggage standing there by itself.'"
"Shit," I said. "Why take the coffin?" he asked. He drank most of his coffee. His Egg McMuffin sat untouched in front of him. They'd put hotcakes in front of me with a little tub of syrup beside it.
"Your breakfast is getting cold," Jason said.
He was enjoying himself too much. I frowned at him, but I opened my coffee. I didn't want the food. I think the master is flexing a little muscle. What do you think, Jason? I kept my voice casual. He smiled at me around a mouthful of food, swallowed, and said, I think whatever Jean-Claude wants me to think. Maybe my voice had been too casual. I should really give up on subtlety. I just wasn't good enough at it.
Did he tell you not to talk to me?
No, just to be careful what I said.
He says jump and you say how high, is that it?
That's it.
He ate a bite of scrambled egg, his face peaceful. Doesn't that bother you?
I don't make the rules, Anita. I'm not an alpha anything.
And it doesn't bother you? I asked.
He shrugged. Sometimes, but there's nothing I can do about it. Why fight it?
I don't understand that at all, Larry said.
Me either.
You don't have to understand it, he said. He couldn't have been more than 20, but the look in his eyes wasn't young. It was the look of someone who'd seen a lot, done a lot, and not all of it nice. It was the look I was dreading to see on Larry's face someday. They were nearly the same age. What had people been doing to Jason to give him such jaded eyes?
What do we do now? Larry asked. You're the vampire experts. I'm just Jean-Claude's pet.
He said it like it didn't bother him.
It would have bothered me.
I shook my head. I'm going to call the cops, then get some sleep.
What are you going to tell them? Jason asked.
I'm going to tell them about Xavier.
Did Jean-Claude say you could tell the cops?
I looked at him. I didn't ask for permission.
Jean-Claude wouldn't like you bringing in the police.
I just stared at him. He blinked at me.
Don't do it just because I said that, please.
He knows you pretty well for someone who's only met you twice, Larry said.
3 times, I said. 2 out of 3 times, he's tried to eat me.
Larry's eyes widened a little.
You're kidding.
She just looks so tasty, Jason said.
I've had about enough of you, I said.
What's wrong? Jean-Claude and Richard both tease you.
I'm dating both of them, I said. I'm not dating you.
Maybe you got a thing for monsters. I can be just as scary as the next guy.
I stared at him.
No, I said. You can't. That's why you're not alpha. That's why you're Jean-Claude's pet, because you aren't scary enough.
Something flowed through his pale blue eyes. Something angry and dangerous. Sitting there with his fork full of scrambled eggs and a Coke in one hand, he was suddenly different. It was hard to put into words, but it raised the hair on the back of my neck.
Ease down, wolf boy, I said. My voice was soft, careful. I was sitting less than a foot away from him. At this distance, he could jump me easily.
The Browning was an inch away from my right hand, but I knew better. I might grab the gun, but I'd never get it pointed in time. I'd seen him move before, and I wasn't quick enough. Lack of sleep was making me trusting, or stupid. Same thing.
A low, trickling growl rumbled out of him. My pulse beat a little faster.
Larry's gun was suddenly pointing past my nose at the werewolf's face.
Don't, Larry said. His voice was low and even, and very damn serious.
I eased back off the bar stool, bringing the Browning with me. Didn't really want Larry's gun to go off right next to my face. I pointed my gun at Jason's chest, one-handed, almost casual.
Don't ever threaten me again.
Jason stared at me. His beast lurked just behind his eyes like a wave rushing towards the shore.
You start going furry, and I won't wait to find out if you're bluffing, I said.
Larry had one knee on the bar stool, gun still pointed nice and steady. I hoped he didn't fall off the bar stool and accidentally shoot Jason. If he shot him, I wanted it to be on purpose. Jason's shoulders relaxed, his hands unclenched, leaving the fork and the drink on the bar. He closed his eyes and sat very still for nearly a full minute. Larry and I waited, guns still pointed. Larry's eyes flicked to me. I shook my head. Jason opened his eyes and let out a deep, sighing breath. He looked normal again. That tension drained away. He grinned.
I had to try.
I took another step back, putting my back to the wall. Out of reach, I lowered the gun. Larry hesitated but followed my lead.
So you tried. Now what?
He shrugged.
You're dominant to me.
Just like that, I said.
Would you be happier if I made you fight me?
I shook my head.
But I